We're holding on Samach Vav Amur Aleph by the first Mishnah. Mishnah says, Hoschen b'yom tovim u'shabbosis. We're still talking throughout the parak about what you're allowed to use as a valid Pesach to be matir the neder, to say if you would realize this side effect or something, or this consequence of the neder, would you have made it? So we say that another thing you can use as a valid Pesach, is you can use Yom Tov and Shabbos. Meaning, in other words, suppose a person made a neder that he's going to fast, or that he's going to deprive himself of meat and wine. So now, we know, obviously, let's say he made this neder to be in effect for a month or a year or something. So we tell him, obviously, you knew that there are Shabbosis and Yom Tovim during that time, but did you realize that on those Shabbosis and on those Yom Tovim, you're not supposed to deprive yourself of things. So that would be a valid Pesach if he says that. He says, you know, of course I knew there were Shabbosis and Yom Tovim during that time. I didn't realize you're not supposed to fast, or you're not supposed to deprive yourself on those days. Then that would be a valid Pesach, and they can be matir as neder on that basis. So now the Mishnah continues, Barishona hoyu omim oisin ayom mutorin ushal kol ayom masurin. Originally, then, the Chachamim said, in that case, if that happens, if they're matir neder on such a basis, then those days will be mutter, but the rest of the days will be usur. So, in other words, here, the person made a neder, let's say that he won't have meat or wine for a month, so all the Shabbosis during that month he'll be allowed to, because we're saying that he regretted those, but the rest of them, all the other days, from Sunday to Friday, will still remain usur. Ad Shabbat Rav Akiva v'limid, until Rav Akiva came along and taught, Shanetchen Hashan Neder Shahuta Mikloi Huta Kuloi. Oh, Miksasa is a different Gersa. That if a Neder, that if the generality of a Neder, or part of a Neder, was cancelled, then the whole thing is cancelled and the whole thing is mutter. So now, once he's allowed to on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, then he's allowed to the rest of the week as well. Udi in the Masechta, Dafkofhei Chavav, we had a long, detailed machlokas about this between Rabba and Rava on the question of what exactly we have the case over there, for example, where a person made a neder that turned out to be shogeg, and we said nidre shogegos al mutter. So we dealt with exactly what's the definition of a neder b'shogeg for this purpose. So we have the example over there we talked about on Daf Chafei Chafav, that let's say, for example, a person sees people in the distance eating his figs, and he yells out at them, those figs are also to you as a korban. Then he comes closer, and he realizes that among them are his father or his brothers. So we had that example. We brought our Mishnah over here. So we had a machlokas over there, Rabba and Rav. Is it that when do we say that neder shehuta miktsase huta kuloi would be when he says that he would have specified, he would have said, for example, that the weekdays are osur and Shabbos is mutter. But on the other hand, if he said, I would have said all of them are osur except for Shabbos, then everybody would agree. We had a machlokas v'shama v'sillel over there about this. So then Rabba had learned everybody would agree that that would be mutter. We would say neder shehuta miktsase huta kuloi. So in short, according to Rabba, in both cases, whether he says, I would have still formulated the neder the same way, but I would have said except for such and such, or whether he's saying I would have actually listed out what is osur and what is mutter. I would have said, for example, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are osur, and Shabbos is mutter. According to Rabba, either one of those is considered, therefore, that we call it neder shehuta miktsase huta kuloi. And then we had Rava saying that. If he says I would have listed them out individually, then all of them are mutter, because then you have both things are for the good, because number one, there was a tos, and number two, he's actually listing out what he would have said is mutter. Whereas if he says that, if I would have said all of you are also except for, then you have a machloikas over there, b'shama and b'shillel, whether we would say that the neder shahut maktsase huter kuloi, and then we would say that, so again, according to Rabba versus Rava, we would say then that that there would be a difference what he would say now. When they tell him, did you realize you're not supposed to fast or you're not supposed to deprive yourself on Shabbos or Yom Tov, what exactly would be that he said? Is it that he'd say, you know, that I would have said all the weekdays are Osir and Shabbos is Mutter? Or is it that he would have said, I would have said all of them are Osir except for Shabbos? So that will be subject to this machloikas of Rabba and Rava that we had over there, which one will make it now that it's Nedush or Hutter Mitzase, Hutter Kolay, versus which ones would we say that in fact the Nedur as a whole is still binding and only Shabbos and Yom Tov are mutter to him. First Mishnah. So Ketan, what's an example of Nedur Shehutim Tzasa and Shehutim Tzlolo Yehutim Kolay? Omer Koinam She'eni Nen Al Kolchem. Suppose a person makes a Nedur, a Koinam, that I won't have Hana from any of you. Hutter, Echad Mehen, Hutru Kolon. Then if one of them becomes Mutter, if he's Mater Neder about one of them, because the Beis Din, for example, mentions to him that there's something about that person that you didn't realize there's a consequence of this Neder that you didn't take into account with this person, so then, so Hutru Kolon, so all of them are Mutter. And again, in that Gemara over there, we mentioned that part of the Mishnah, and we said that according to Rabba's understanding, at least you would have to say that it means that the Mishnah is going to go on to describe over here that he said each one in turn depending on the other one. So in other words, he would start by saying that Reuven is also to be, and Shimon should be like Reuven, and Levi should be like Reuven, etc. That would be the next case in the Mishnah. So when he says Lekulchem, now when he's matter one of them, then he's matter all of them, because that's neder shehutu mitzase, hutu kolay. And then the Mishnah is going to go on to describe a different case where he made one depend on the other. If he says I won't have hana from this one or from this one, so he names them out. I won't have hana from Reuven or from Shimon. Hutu harishin hutu kolon. Then if the first one is mutter, all of them are mutter. And the Gemara explains over there that according to Rabba, we would have to say shetlon zebazeh. Not just that he said, I won't have anah from Reuven or Shimon, but that he said, I won't have anah from Reuven, and Shimon is just like Reuven. If he's mutter the last one, then only the last one is mutter, and all the ones before him are mutter. Again, if we say shetlon zebazeh, then what we mean is, because he said Reuven should be also to be independently, in other words, then he said Shimon should be also like Reuven. Well, then in that case, if he's Matur Shimon, then okay, but Reuven still remains also. He didn't do anything regarding Reuven. So therefore, Reuven is going to remain also. We haven't put the next line is in parenthesis because in fact it's not part of the original Mishnah. We brought it over there as part of a Braisa. We said the Tanya over there. We said we learn in a Braisa. So here, somebody stuck it into the Mishnah. That if he was Matir one in the middle. So what if he said Reuven, Shimon, and Levi? Then if he's Matir Shimon, then Levi is also Mutter, but Reuven remains Osir. And the same thing with any other case. So again, you have that whole discussion over there on Daf Hei Chavav about this matter of Mamid, where he's saying, I still want to uphold what I said originally. I just want to, I'm using the same lotion. I'm just making an exception for the one person. So that's not neder shehutu mitzasei because of mekloloi, because after all, that person then was saying was never really included in the neder in the first place, and everybody else is still using the same lashon on them. That would be according to Rabba. And then according to Rabba, the key thing was in not so much whether he's mamid, but whether he's listing them out individually, or whether he's using the same lashon as before, where then we can say we can talk about lashon rishon and lashon achron, the original part of the statement that he made versus the later part, or where we have a whole new statement that we have to evaluate. Okay, continues the Mishnah. What if he mentions them individually, not only individually, but he actually uses the Lashon Korban or Kodem or what have you on each one of them individually? So he says, I'll be also to have Reuven, I'll be also to have Hanah from Reuven like a Korban. I'll be also to have Hanah from Shimon like a Korban. Well, okay, not I'll, whatever. Reuven's Nechasim will be also to me like a Korban. Shimon's Nechasim will be also to me like a Korban. Then one is not dependent on the other. Therefore, it's Srichin Pesach L'chalacha V'achad. Therefore, if you want to be matu any of them, you need an individual Pesach for each one. So obviously, if you can find a Pesach that'll cover all of them, if you can tell him, for example, like we learned yesterday, that did you realize you're being over on Loisika and Loisiter, etc., etc., then fine, that'll cover all of them. But if they can't do that, if that's not going to work for whatever reason, then they need to find an individual Pesach that can say to him, do you realize that Reuven is, for example, they can tell him, do you realize do you realize there's something about Reuven that you're likely to need him in the near future? And do you realize that there's something about Shimon that you're likely to need in the near future? So we have a few different cases so far in the Mishnah. We have the case where he says, a general nether, and now we tell him you should realize that within that nether there's somebody or something that you have a problem with, that we can find a Pesach for you. So we said, Rabbi Akiva says, nether shehutam atzase hutav boloi. So then you have, again, that machloikas about whether that would apply even if he's mamid, even if he's still saying, I still want to keep the same Lashon, I'm just accepting the Shabbosis and Yom Tovim, or would it only work if he's saying a whole new Lashon, only if he says, in that case, I would have said the weekdays are also in the Shabbos and Mutter. We have the case in the Mishnah where he says a bunch of people together, kulchem, all of you collectively. That's another example of hutam k'tase, hutam kulay. And then you have where he's listing them one after the other and saying each one is dependent on the previous one, where there we say each one down in the chain is dependent on the previous one. And if you matter one, then all the ones following him are mutter. And finally, you have the case where he mentioned each of them independently without saying this one depends on that one, where there we say they have nothing to do with each other. There's no matter of neder shehutam k'tzaseh hutakoloi. Each one counts in effect as a separate neder of its own, and you need a separate Pesach for each one. Continues the Mishnah with more examples of this matter of neder shehutam k'tzaseh, a neder where you have part of it was canceled because they pointed out to him that, some consequence, for example, like in the case of Shabbos and Yom Tov, that did you realize you're not supposed to deprive yourself Shabbos and Yom Tov? So here's another example. Koinam yayin shani toyim. Suppose a person says a koinam that I won't taste wine. Shayayin ra la me'ayin, because wine is bad for your stomach. Omru lois, people tell him, v'aleim yushin yofel me'ayin. What are you talking about? Old wine is good for your stomach. So then he's mutter to drink. Then he's mutter to drink the old wine, because again, then it was a toast to include. The loyva miyushin bilvad mutter. So then, not only is he mutter to drink old wine, ela b'chol hayayin, but he's allowed to drink then any kind of wine. That would be another example of nedu shehutam k'tzaseh hutar kuloi. So that would actually be an example. That would actually be an example of nedu toast. So in other words, here the Ran says, unlike in the earlier part where, for example, he made a neder not to have meat and we're telling him, don't you realize that that's going to deprive you of meat on Shabbos? There you need a Pesach. He can't just be matter neder on his own. That's not neder tos. That's a different thing. That's neder shehutam k'tzaseh or shehutam k'tzaseh, and therefore you need a Pesach for it. Here we're talking about that he realizes that to begin with, his neder included something which it never should have included in the first place. So now he'll actually be mutter altogether to drink old wine. And once he is, the Ran points out, he'll also actually be mutter to drink all other kinds of wine as well. Because that would be an example of a neder tos, or neder shgoga, because he didn't realize to begin with that the premise that he's basing himself on, namely that all wine is bad for you, is wrong. There is in fact a kind of wine that's good for you. similarly, koinam botzel shani toyim. Similarly, if he says a koinam that I won't eat, that I won't eat onions, because onions are bad for your heart or your stomach. So they tell him, isn't a kufri onion good for your heart? Where kufri can mean onions from the villages, or it can mean from a place called kufri. Same thing. Kufri, he's mutter then to eat kufri onions, because that part was a mistake. Kufri, and then he's mutter not only to eat kufri onions, he's allowed to eat all kinds of onions. Because again, it's an example of neder shehuter mektaseh, huter kulay, and unlike in the earlier part of the Mishnah, with Shabbos and Yom Tov, where it wasn't that it's that once we tell him, don't you realize that Shabbos and Yom Tov, you're not supposed to deprive yourself, then he says, in that case, I would have said the neder differently, whereas here, in other words, it's based on a completely mistaken premise that he thought that all wine or all onions are bad for you. So he's mutter even without a Pesach. And the Mishnah. So we know, in fact, that the opposite is true of at least one kind of wine or one kind of onion, right? So again, there's a difference. In other words, where he said that's the thing. The Ran explains. He mentioned he refers to his perush earlier in the Masechta when we were dealing with this whole matter of Nidrei Shgagas. So the Ran says like this: a person made himself also, let's say, meat or wine. He knows there are Shabbosis in Yom Tovim during that day, during that time. So therefore, all it is we tell him, don't you realize you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos and Yom Tov? So therefore, we can talk about that originally the Chachamim said then that only Shabbos and Yom Tov are mutter, the rest is also. Rabbi Akiva comes and tells us, and there you're going to have the whole discussion between Rabbah and Rava of what exactly it is that he says when he changes his mind, that now we'll make it that we would call it that the neder is completely bottle versus when we would say that part of the neder is still in effect. But when it comes to you need a Pesach, but you can be Matu Neder on that basis. Whereas when he says, for example, that wine is bad for you, that's a completely mistaken premise, because to begin with, wine is not necessarily bad for you, as they tell him. Certain kinds of wine are good for you. So therefore, the whole thing was based on a mistaken premise, and therefore we say it's mutter even without a Pesach. So it's mutter right, the neder falls right away on its own. And the Mishnah says, Maisa hoyavi tirav meir b'chol abitzalim. In fact, it happened an actual case that Rav Meir allowed him to eat all the different kind of onions, meaning that it wasn't just that Rav Meir held that theoretically, he actually acted that way in practice and paskin halacha like that. Okay. So now, again, most of the Mishnah we discussed previously on Daf Chof Hei Chavav, therefore the Gemara doesn't repeat that discussion over here, but there is one point, two or three points in our Mishnah that the Gemara is going to shtel zechan. First of all, we said, Huter ha'achron, ha'achron mutter b'chol ha'asurim. We said, we have the case where he says, Reuven's nechosim should be also to me, and Shimon's nechosim should be like Reuven's, and Levi's nechosim should be also like Shimon's, and so forth. And then we said, that if he's matir neder on Levi, all the rest of them, Reuven and Shimon, still remain also to him. Because we're saying each one depends on the previous one, so any place where you break the chain, then the chain from there down is broken, but not on. So the Gemara says, Man Tana. Which Tana is it that says that? In other words, we're saying that now, really actually what it is the Mishnah is focusing on, the Gemara is focusing on like this. We mentioned that, but then further on, we mentioned in the Mishnah that on the other hand, if he said a korban individually for each one, then he needs a separate Pesach for each one. So which Tana would it be that says that just saying Reuven and Shimon and Levi is not enough to make them separate Nedarim, but only saying Reuven's Nechosim are a Korban, Shimon's Nechosim are a Korban, Levi's Nechosim are a Korban, which Tana would it be that makes that distinction? The answer is Omar Rav Reb Shimon. That would be specifically according to Reb Shimon, the Omar, where he says in a din in the Sefta Shavuos, Ad Shiyema Shavuah L'Cholach HaBachon, that he's only chayev a separate korban when he says individually a shavuah to each one. Namely, we know the Torah tells us in Parashas Vayikra, you have the concept of Shvuas HaPikadon. If Reuven, for example, is a shomer for Shimon, or Reuven has somehow in his possession money that Shimon is claiming as his, it could be a Pikadon, it could be a loan, it could be something that Reuven lost, it could be something that Shimon lost and Reuven found, whatever the case. If Shimon goes to Reuven and he beswears him that he doesn't owe him that money or he doesn't have it, and Reuven says, and Reuven says, Amen, or Reuven himself makes the Shvura, whatever the case, if it turns out that it was a Shvura's Shog, and Reuven is ready to do Tshuva, then he has to pay Keren B'Chomish, he has to pay Shimon the value plus 25%, and he has to bring a Korban Osham, this is the Asham Gzelus that we mentioned in Morning Davening. So the Mishnah and the Gemara discuss over there in Shavuos what exactly is, suppose you have, now what if you have many people, dunning him for money? So Reuven is approached by Shimon and Levi and Yehuda, and each of them tells him, you know, you owe us money, where is it? So now, what would happen if Reuven swears, he says, I don't owe any of you money? So then we would say, if it turns out that was a false Shavuos, then he's only bringing one korban. On the other hand, what if he were to say a shvua that I don't owe Shimon or Levi or Yehuda? Is that enough to be considered separate shvuas and therefore separate korbanos, or would it be considered all one shvua? So Rav Shimon says over there that no. Even if he says, I don't owe Shimon or Levi or Yehuda, that still makes it only one korban. Only if he said, a shvua that I don't owe Shimon, a shvua that I don't owe Levi, a shvua that I don't owe Yehuda, then if it turns out that they're false, then he would be bringing three korbanos. So Rav Shimon says over there, ad shigim a shvua l'chalach ad-rechad, only if he says the actual word shvua for each one, but not just if he says Shimon and Levi and Yehuda. So, by analogy, in our Mishnah, if he says, Shimon and Levi and Yehuda are also to me, then we would still count that as, Reb Shimon would still count that as one Shvua, and therefore, if he's Mater one of them, then all of them can be Mutter. Only if he says a chain, Reb Shimon, and then Levi is like Shimon, and Yehuda is like Levi, then we would say wherever you break the chain, then it's broken. As opposed to, in our Mishnah, when he said, Korban Lozev, Lozev Korban, Lozev Korban, then each one is a separate neder and needs its own separate Pesach. That would be Rav Shimon, who says in the same case by the Shavuos HaPikadon that you would have to say Shavuot to each one individually in order to be chayav for a separate Korban. We said in the Mishnah, koinam yayin shani toyim before. We said he makes a koinam that I won't drink wine because wine is bad for the stomach. And then they tell him that in fact, old wine is good for your stomach. So we said he's mutter in old wine, and not only in old wine, he's mutter in all kinds of wine. So the Gemara says, the typically to end that. Why do you even need to mention the point that it's good for him? The point was he made the nether because wine is bad for you. All they need to do is demonstrate to him that wine is not bad for your stomach. Why, they don't need to tell him that a certain kind is good for your stomach. As long as it's not bad, then the nether should be bottle on that basis. Amar Abba, v'oid yofa katani. So you're right, Rav Abba says the Mishnah is actually saying that they're telling him not only is it not bad for you, it's actually good for you. But as a matter of fact, yeah, if they were to just tell him, we can show you that wine is not bad for your stomach, it's just neutral, it's neither bad nor good, that would also be a valid reason for the nether to be canceled, because the fact is his nether was predicated on the idea that wine is bad for you. And the same thing with the next case, the same way when he says about onions that I won't eat them because they're bad for your heart, and they tell him that kufri onions are good for your heart, same thing, the typical age of isn't it enough to say that it's not bad for you? Why do they need to mention the fact that it's good? And the same thing, it means, in other words, that they're saying that they're saying not only is it not bad for you, you should know it's actually good for you. So all the more so, definitely that makes it more of a neder tos, and therefore that makes it therefore that the whole thing is bottled. Next, the Mishnah says, "Poischin la'adam b'chvoid atzmo b'chvoid banim." You can use as a pesach a person's own kavod and the kavod of his children. Again, the premise throughout our parak is whenever we say about something that you could or can't use, that you can or can't use as a pesach, the point is when we say you could use something as a pesach, we're saying that this is something that a person might well be able to tell the Beis Din, you know what, I don't care about that. And it wouldn't, and a normal person might be able to do that without being embarrassed in the presence of Beis Din. So therefore, when they tell him this, and he says, you know what, actually, that's true, I didn't think of that, then we can say he means that sincerely. As opposed to whenever throughout the Perek we're saying that you can't do something of the Pesach, it means something that we can't expect that the average person would be able to say ever against it, you know what, I don't care about that. So therefore, now when he's saying I care, he may not sincerely mean it, he may be just really doing it to avoid embarrassment. So that's why we said, for example, let's say in the first Mishnah of the Perek, we said that according to Rabbi Eliezer had said he could use the cupboard of his parents, and the Chachamim disagreed because Rabbi Eliezer took the view that a person might well say to the Beis Din, you know what, the cupboard of my parents, who cares? So therefore, in other words, he has the option open in front of him to say who cares versus to say I care, and therefore if he says I care, then that's sincere. As opposed to the Chachamim figure, a normal person doesn't have that option open to him. The only thing when you tell him the covet of your parents is involved over here, necessarily he's going to say, you know what, that's true. Let's be matir neder on that basis. But he may not mean that sincerely. That's the expression he had at the beginning of the parak, that Abaya said, ein nedarim mitarim yafa, that we're not going to have a good atoras nedarim because it has to be sincere, and we don't know that he's going to be sincere. We had also Rava's explanation over there, which is, that then people are going to figure, in that case, that kind of thing, covered of my parents is always involved, so therefore why should I even bother going to be Matir Neder if I go to the Chacham, I'm just going to mention that to me anyhow. Anyway, so now again, we're continuing with things that you are allowed to use as a Pesach, where again, the idea is a person does have the mental option of saying yes or no, and therefore when he says yes, I want to be Matir Neder on this basis, we have good reason to assume that it's sincere. So that would include his own covered and the covered of his children. For example, suppose he made a neder that he's going to divorce his wife, or he made a neder, let's say that his wife is going to be also to have anah from him, where the result of that is going to be that they're going to have to get divorced. So we tell him. Did you realize when you made the nether that later on people are going to say about you, this is your regular way of doing things. The word vest, by the way, I mean, most often we're familiar with the word vest in connection with Ilchus Nidah, but really you have over there the calculations of the vest or whatever. Really the basic meaning of vest is the usual way of doing things. So a woman's vest is called that because that's usually when she can be expected to have a flow. So here we mean vest as in the normal way. This is the way this guy behaves. Megarish has nosher, but he divorces his wives. In other words, they're going to tell him, do you realize that people are going to be talking badly about you and saying, look at this guy, you know, you can't get along with him. Anytime he gets married, he's soon going to get divorced. So now, again, the person always has the option of telling Beis Din, you know what, I don't care about that. So therefore, if he says, I do care, then we can say that that's sincere. Furthermore, we tell him, what about your daughters? People are going to say they're the daughters of a woman who was divorced. The people are going to ask, Ma Rosin, which means, in other words, people are going to think that they're not really good shidduch material. After all, what did their mother see? In other words, what made her suitable to be divorced? Or a slightly different girsa is ma rol garish iman shalelu. Whatever the case, the point is, it means about the same thing. It means what caused that she got divorced. People are going to start thinking, in other words, that your wife did something wrong, that she was over on something in the Torah, and therefore you divorced her. So either you have, in other words, you have kvod atzmai, that people are going to say you are a difficult person to get along with and you always divorce your wives, or they're going to say about your children that their mother obviously was a no-good nick and that's why he divorced her. So now, the Omar, Ilu or Yisi, Adi Ashikain, if he now says to the Beis Din, I didn't realize that, if I'd known, I wouldn't have done that, Loya Yisi Noja, I wouldn't have said the Neder, Hareza Mutter, then you have a valid Pesach for the Neder. Another example, here's an example, on the other hand, of Neder Tos. So again, what we just talked about is an example of a Pesach to a Neder. So the Neder in and of itself was not made betos. He made it at the time sincerely. But now they point out to him a side effect of it that he hadn't considered. Now, though, here's a case where the neder itself was based on a mistaken premise, which we learned earlier, we learned yesterday. We had Rav Huna versus Rav Yochanan discussing the case in the Mishnah that we had on Samachayim and Aleph, about the case where a person says, I won't marry Tzoinis because her father is bad, or I won't go into this house because there's a bad dog in it, where it turns out the father has done tshuva, or the snake has died, or the dog has died, or are we talking about that it's considered Tola Nidre Bedover, it's considered that he made it dependent on that, now it turns out that factor goes away, or Rabbi Yochanan says the case is that he didn't realize that at the time of the nether that factor had already gone away. And we ask that according to Rabbi Yochanan, it seems that Mishnah and our Mishnah are both talking about toast, and the Gemara left it as a caption. Whereas according to Rabbi Huna, the earlier one was talking about a nether that was based on something which turns out to have changed, whereas our Mishnah is talking about a nether that was a toast in the first place. So, suppose the person says, koinem shani noses ploinis, a koinem against that I won't marry ploinis, ka'ura, she's ugly, vaharehina, and it turns out she's not ugly, she's beautiful. Shchora, he says she's dark skinned, vaharehi lavana, and she's fair skinned. Ksara, he says she's short, vaharehi aruka, and it turns out that she's tall. Mutterba, so now he's mutter to be able to marry her and to have enough. Loy mipneshi ka'ura v'nasas na, shchora v'nasas lavana, ksara v'nasas arufa. It's not because things changed that she was ugly and became beautiful and so forth. Ella, shan neder tos, rather what it is the neder to begin with was a tos, and therefore it doesn't even require hataras nedar. So we distinguished before when we talked about this yesterday, the Ran talked about two possibilities. One, from the Rashba, it's very unusual that a woman who was ugly becomes beautiful. Therefore, if it were to be that way, that would in fact be an example of Noilud, and you can't use that as a Pesach for Ataras Nedarim, versus, for example, to say that I won't marry her because her father is a bad guy, it's very common that he would do tshuva. That was one way. And then the other way that the Ran brought from Reb Shmuel, Reb Yehuda, Reb Chistoi, is that the word ka'ura in our Mishnah is just meant as a description. I'm not marrying Plinus. You want to know which Plinus? The one who's ugly. So therefore, it's not Tola Nidre B'Dover. He's saying as a blanket statement, I won't marry her. So the only way it would work is if in fact it was based on a mistake in the first place and she was not in fact ugly. The Mishnah continues, it happened once that a certain man made a neder not to have hana from his niece. And they brought her into Rabbi Shmuel's house, and Rabbi Shmuel beautified her. And then, Omalei Rabbi Shmuel, Bni Mizuna Darta, so Rabbi Shmuel says to him, my son, younger man, Did you make a neder not to have hana from this girl? Omalei lav, so he says no. But he teared Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel was able to be matur neder. Now the Gemara is going to ask that this seems to contradict what we just said. We just said that if she was ugly and became beautiful, then the neder is still in effect because then that's nolad, or because it wasn't tola nidre b'dover. It wasn't that he was making the neder dependent on something. Here, all of a sudden, we're saying that Rabbi Shmuel allowed it. So how does that work? So we're going to see in the Gemara what the Mishnah means. But Oisa Shah Bachar Rabbi Shmuel. So at that time, Rabbi Shmuel was crying in sympathy for Jewish women who have to go through this kind of thing. But Omar, and he said, Nois Yisrael Nois, saying, really, all Jewish girls are beautiful. Elisha Anias Menavaltan. But poverty makes them look ugly. So in other words, here, look at this. This girl, objectively, she had it in her to be beautiful, as in fact she did turn out to be, just that the circumstances that she was living in made her ugly because she was poor. And when Rabbi Shmuel passed away, and this wasn't the only girl that he did this kind of thing for, so when he passed away, the Jewish women were raising a lament, they were crying and mourning, especially for him, for Omeris, and they used the expression, Jewish women cry regarding Rabbi Shmuel. You find by Shaul a similar expression after he was killed in battle, where David HaMelech says on him, David HaMelech says a long kina on him, and he uses the same expression, Jewish women cry regarding Shaul, and in fact, in the pasuk there it continues, because Shaul also did tremendous things on behalf of the women of the Jewish people. He did tremendous things on behalf of the people in general, but the pasuk goes on to mention that he caused the Jewish women to be clothed in beautiful clothes, because he fought against the goyim around Eretz Yisrael, and he captured lots of spoils from them, and therefore now they had beautiful clothing that they captured from them, that the beautiful clothing and jewelry that the Jewish women are able to wear. So therefore David says, you Jewish women have special reason more than anybody else to cry over the loss of Shaul. And the same way now in Rabbi Shmuel's times, they use the same expression about him because he had put so much effort into beautifying Jewish women. So the Gemara asks, though, Maisa Lister, you seem to be having a story in the Mishnah that contradicts what we just said before. We just said that if she was ugly and became beautiful, then that's no good. Because then it's not a nether toast, and it means that then you have a new circumstance that came up, which is noilad, and we learned earlier that you can't use noilad for a nether. So when, and then we have the story of Rabbi Shmuel, where she was ugly and became beautiful. The answer is chasuri machsura. The Mishnah is missing words. B'hachi katani. What it means to say is Rabbi Shmuel Omer, afilu ku'ura v'nasas na. No, Rabbi Shmuel says even if she was ugly and then became beautiful, shchoda v'nasas levano, even if she was dark-skinned, and now became fair-skinned, shchoda v'nasas arucha, even if she was short, and now she grew and became tall, then even then we can use that. Because, in other words, he holds that you can actually use noilad. Now, the halacha is not like him. The halacha is like the chachamim, that you can't use noilad. But nevertheless, the Mishnah is mentioning that. In other words, that Rabbi Shmuel disagrees. He holds like Rabbi Eliezer at the beginning of the parak that you can use noilad, and the Chachamim disagree. And we have the example in our Mishnah where Rabbi Shmuel actually did that, where he beautified her, and then he tells the boy that you obviously didn't mean to make the neder when you have something like that, even though it may be noilad, but nevertheless I hold that noilad is a valid thing to be matter in neder. On the other hand, that's how the Rambam explains. The Rosh explains that no, Rabbi Shmuel doesn't necessarily have to be holding that noilad is mutter. What it means is Rabbi Shmuel would say, I agree in cases of noilad that are completely unexpected. Sure, those don't work. But you know what? That a girl was ugly and then you're able to pretty her up, that's a common enough thing. So it means it means that all along she had it within her to be beautiful. Therefore, you can't say that something that changed. You can't say, for example, that this is a case where somebody is alive and now they're dead, where their status has changed, and when they were alive, they weren't dead. Here you have, all along, she was beautiful. It was just covered up by grime and whatever, and now we've removed that and showed the inner beauty that was there all along. Therefore, in other words, according to the Rosh, Rabbi Shmuel would be saying, this is not noilad in the first place. So the Chachamim would still say that, not that the Chacham would say that's enough to be considered noilad. Rabbi Shmuel would say that's not considered noilad in the first place. So that's what the Mishnah is saying. If it was that when he made the nether, in fact she was already beautiful, and he was going based on an outdated photo or something and thought that she was ugly, then yeah, that would be your nether toast, no problem. What we're talking about is at the time of the nether, she was in fact ugly. Now, later on, Rabbi Shmuel beautified her. So now, that's different than the wine or the onions, where all along, this kind of wine or these kinds of onions are good for you. So that's why the Chachamim are saying this would be an example of noilad, and that's no good. Rabbi Shmuel would be saying, fine, it's noilad, but I don't care. I hold that you can use noilad. That's according to the Dan. So that would be an example. You put it on a diet, for example. So according to the Ran, the Chachamim would call that noilad. And Rabbi Shmuel would not. According to the Rosh, the vote would be that Rabbi Shmuel would say all along she had it in her to be skinny, just that right now she had overeaten, whereas the Chacham would still say that that's considered noilad. Yeah. The Gemara continues, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, one thing that Rabbi Shmuel did for this girl, in particular, Shein Teteves, Hoysalah, she had a false tooth. One of her teeth had fallen out or broken, so she had a false tooth over there, which didn't look very nice. But also, Rabbi Shmuel, Shein Shal Zahav Mishaloi, Rabbi Shmuel made her a golden tooth out of his own money, where therefore it would look much nicer. And Achronim talk about, and the Achronim compare this actually with a Gemara in Shabbos, where it talks about over there that what you're allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing and what you're not, what kinds of things are there a concern that people might make fun of, and then a person might take it off and carry it and rush it out. So one thing is, so the Gemara mentions over there that you're allowed to go out on Shabbos with a silver tooth because that blends in with the other teeth, but not with a gold tooth. So now, dentistry, yeah. I mean, it wasn't as advanced as our dentistry, but yeah, they had. So the Maharsha points out like this: in that Gemara over there, when it talks about using a gold tooth, are you allowed to? So the word is Rashi understands over there that the reason why a gold tooth would be a problem on Shabbos is because since it's so precious, she might take it out of her mouth and show it off to her friends and then end up carrying it on Shabbos. So according to that, then yeah, it fits very well over here that Rabbi Shmuel made her a gold tooth, which is something very precious and expensive and something that she can pride herself on. But Maharsha says, Rashi's Rebbeim over there explain, on the contrary, the problem with a gold tooth on Shabbos is it doesn't match the other teeth. Therefore, she's likely to be embarrassed of it and carry it over here. Then why would Rabbi Shmuel be making her a gold tooth? Better he should have made her a silver tooth. So different Acharonim talk about it. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that maybe it wasn't literally a gold tooth. Maybe it means so much careful workmanship was put into it that it was worth its weight in gold. But not that it was literally made out of gold. It may well have been made out of silver or something else that would blend in with her other teeth. But he says there are other possibilities also. Her other teeth may have been yellowish, and therefore gold would blend in better with them. Whatever the case, the point is that Rabbi Shmuel, it wasn't just that he brought her into his house and gave her good food and drink and clothes and whatever. He even paid an enormous amount of money to get to for her dental work. And the Gemara says, Kishochev Rabbi Shmuel, when Rabbi Shmuel passed away, so we said in the Mishnah that the Jewish women were mourning for him using a variation of Pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, so Pasuk Halayahu Safdana, Hafim. So one of the professional mourners, we learned back in Moed Cotton, that by Levias they would have professionals who would start a speech to be order people to crying, he used that expression, Nos Yisrael, Rabbi Shmuel Bechena, Jewish women cry regarding Rabbi Shmuel, who clothed you in such finery. So the same way, and Maharsha explains that the point was, you have the pasuk big day shani, and adi zahav, the expression is that Shol caused the Jewish women to be dressed in big day shani, which means scarlet clothing, and adi zahav, golden ornaments. Maharsha explains that there's this safdan, this mourner, was also, this professional mourner, was also playing on the meaning of shani as being related to the word shein, which means a tooth. So he was using that to say, look at Rabbi Shmuel. He put so much tremendous effort into beautifying Jewish women that even he spent for shani, meloshin shein, for gold, for a tooth, and not just a tooth of anything, but adi zahav, as the plus continues, golden ornaments, because he made the tooth made out of gold. So now the Gemara digresses to talk about then different other examples of Chachamim and how they dealt with Shalom Bayis issues of people who came to them. So the Gemara says, Ahuda Amalo Dvesu, there was a man who said to his wife, Koinam she'iat nanasli, a koinam that you will be also to have a nar from me, ad she'tatimi tapshilich l'Rab Yehuda or l'Rab Shimon, unless you go and give your cooked dish to Rab Yehuda and Rab Shimon to taste. In other words, he was saying you're a bad cook. And only if Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are willing to taste your food, only then will you be allowed to have enough from me. Otherwise, you're off limits to me. So, Rabbi Yehuda toim. So when she brought it to Rabbi Yehuda, he tasted from it. Omar, he said, of course I have to cover chomer. Ma lasis shomer min ishlish, right? Ma doch to make peace between man and wife. The Torah says that Hashem's name that was written in Kedusha should be dissolved and erased into the water, the water which brings a curse on her, and the whole thing is only based on a suffix, because we don't even know for sure that she was Mizana. So Vani Alachas Kamakama, how much more so? Rabbi Yehuda says, I should set aside my cupboard and taste from this woman's dish. Yes, it may taste awful, but at least, you know, I'll pretend that it's good, and that way I'll cause shalom bias between them. On the other hand, Rav Shimon Loitoim, Rav Shimon did not want to taste from it. Omar, and he said a very sharp expression, Yamusu kol bnei almana, let all the children of the almana die, bal yozu Shimon mimakoyim, right? And Shimon is not going to move from his place. Which means, in other words, that he's saying, he's cursing the husband that he ought to die and his wife will become an almana, and that the children even will be called bnei almana, that eventually the Ran says they may end up dying as well. In other words, because there's a bizoyan of Tamid Chachamim involved over here. The man has no right to treat Tamid Chachamim with such contempt. But and also because you don't want people to get used to making such casual nadarim. So in other words, Rav Shimon would figure that if he does this, if he allows this woman, this husband and wife to treat him like that, there's two problems. Number one is a lack of coverage for Tamar HaChamim, which is a very important thing. And the other point is that then it's going to encourage him to make these kinds of foolish nadarim in the future, because then he's going to figure he can get away with it. In fact, Maoshav refers to the fact that the Gemara actually tells us in Shabbos that when a person makes the dorim and doesn't fulfill them, it can cause that his wife passes away. And his children can pass away. So as far as the children, the same thing as any person who makes a neder casually. As far as him himself, well, he's the one who made the neder, he's the one who made the neder, and he's the one who is disrespecting the Chachamim, so therefore Rav Shimon is cursing him out like that. In other words, the result is Rav Shimon is going to say, we're not going to allow him to get away with this and allow him to treat the Chachamim with contempt like that. If he still wants to stay married to her, he's going to have to find a way to be matir neder rather than thinking that he can get away with insulting the Chachamim. Ben Yehoyada, by the way, has a couple of cute things about it. He says, first of all, that when he says all the bnei almana should die, he's hinting at the Christians. Who's the founder of their religion? Was a man who was born from a woman who wasn't married at the time, where they claimed that so she claimed to be an almana, and therefore whatever we know what she claimed. So therefore, when he says bnei almana, he's actually referring to them. He doesn't want to curse out a yid chas v'shalom, so he's cursing them out. And the al yozes Shimon Mimkoimo, he says, you think about it. Rav Shimon is not going to want to eat in the Beis Medrash. It's not respectful to eat in the Beis Medrash. So therefore, it means literally he would have to move from his place. He would literally have to get up and leave the Beis Medrash in order to taste this food. And he figured that that's not the appropriate thing to do. So these are both different valid approaches, al pi Torah, to dealing with this matter of when the covenant of the Torah is at stake. You have Rabbi Yehuda saying it's true that you're not supposed to, you have to be careful about the covenant of Tamid Chachamim, but to make Shalom Ben Ishtay overrides that, and Rabbi Shimon holds that not. Another example, a man says to his wife, Koinam she'iat nanasli, a koinam that you won't be able to have hana from me, ad she taruki boy b'Rav Shimon Gamliel, unless you spit at Rav Shimon, b'Rav Shimon Gamliel, unless you spit at Rav Shimon Gamliel. So Rav Shimon Gamliel allowed her instead to spit on his clothing, osas v'rokak alabushay, so she came and spat on his clothing. And that was enough. Now she had fulfilled the term, and therefore the neder is canceled. Omelet of Achami Difti the Rabbina, but of Achami Difti, hundreds of years later, asked Rabbina, how did that work? For her highly zilusa kamakavin, obviously this husband meant that she should act in a way that degrades Rav Shimon Gamliel. How is spitting on his clothes such a degradation? Well, on the face of it, he meant that she should spit in Rav Shimon Gamliel's face or something. Omelet, so Rabbina answers, no, Meira Hamani, that Rav Shimon Gamliel, zilusa rabzi, to spit on Rav Shimon Gamliel's clothing itself is a tremendous bizoyan. So that's enough. That's enough to fulfill the terms of the neder. It wouldn't have to be that she spits actually on his face or on some part of his body itself. You have in this connection, by the way, the Medrash tells a famous story involving the mayor, where one night a woman went to his drosha and came home very late, and her husband is angry at her and is mad at her hana unless she goes and spits in the mayor's face. So the mayor heard what happened, and again, he held like the Yehuda over here, that you have to set aside, and like the Shem Lamil, that you have to set aside your covered for shalom bias between husband and wife, So he pretended, but instead of saying openly, go ahead and spit in my face, he pretended that he had an eye infection, where the remedy for it in those times, an accepted remedy, was to spit in the eye. So then, so he calls her in, and then tells her to spit in his eye 7 times. And then he tells her, now you can go back, tell your husband, I didn't just spit in her mayor's face 1 time, I spit in his eye face 7 times. And the Talmidim asked him, how could you do that? He gave him the same answer, that Lasas Cholomin Ishtay overrides everything else. Another example of how the Chachamim worked to make Shalom bias between people, how Huda Amal Olad Vesu, a man says to his wife, Koinam she'iat nanasli, a koinam that you won't be able to have enough of me, ad shatari mum yofa shabich l'rab shmal b'rab yosi. Unless you show the nice mum or in you to Rabbi Shmuel b'rab yosi. So what does that mean? In other words, this woman, as we're going to say in the story over here, was full of mum. So her husband didn't like her for that. So the Ran gives two explanations. The first explanation is that the word mum is actually similar to the word me'um with an aleph, which means anything. Like you have in Tanakh, in many places you have the word me'uma. So therefore, according to that, he's saying, if you can find anything nice, even one thing nice about you, that you can show to Shmuel ben Yosi, then you will be also to have enough of me. If you can't find anything nice about yourself, then fine, I'm willing to cancel my net. So therefore, let's see if Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yosi can find any one nice thing about her. The second explanation, the Ran said. So according to that first explanation in the Ran, the vote is he's saying, I believe that you're so completely full of mumim that there's nothing attractive about you whatsoever. If you can find, therefore, so now he's saying, if you can find even one attractive thing about you that you can show to Bishmal Rabbi Yosi, then you will be also to have enough of me. That's the Ram's first explanation. The Ram's second explanation, which most of the other Mephoshim here also accept, is on the contrary. The word is mum yafa. So he's saying, in other words, you're going to be usher unless, just the opposite, you're going to be usher unless you can show Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi, something attractive about you. In other words, according to that, it's the other way around. He's saying, I believe that you're so full of mumim that I don't want to stay married to you. If Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi, who was the Chacham in that time, can find even one attractive thing about you, then fine, I'm willing to stay married to you. And the Marashah gives a third possibility, that it means that he's saying, look, among all your mumim, there's got to be at least one that out of all the other ones, there's got to be one that's the least objectionable, that's the most attractive. Go show that to Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi wanted to be matir her to her husband. So he starts going through. Amar lahem, he says to the people, Shema Rosh Hanah, does her head look beautiful? They told him, no, her head is round. It's a weird shape. Does her hair look nice? They tell him, no, it looks like bundles of flax. It's frizzy. It's piled one on top of the other. It's not attractive. Are her eyes beautiful? They tell him, no, trutes, saying. They're trutes, which the Ran explains means they're round, they're rounder than they should. The Mefarish, printed under Rashi's name, says Rakos, that they're weak. So her eyes aren't good either. Shem Ozneha Nois, they ask, are her ears beautiful? They tell them, no, Kula, saying, her ears are doubled over. Like they're so big and they hang down, they look like they're folded over. Shem Achoitmana, is her nose nice? They tell them, no. Her nose is swollen. Bolum literally means closed, so it means, in other words, it's so swollen that it looks like it's closed, like her nostrils are closed. He says, are her lips beautiful? They tell him, no, obviously, her lips are thick. Is her neck beautiful? They tell him, no, her neck is short. Her neck is short and webbed, you can't see, her head is literally is like right on top of her shoulders. He asks, Shema Kresana, is her stomach beautiful? They tell him, no, Savahu, her stomach is swollen. Shema Raglaha nice, are her legs and feet nice? They tell him, no, Rechobis Kishal Abza. Her feet are wide like the feet of a duck. He asks, Shema Shmona, does she have a nice name? They tell him, no, Lachluchis Shema. Her name is Lachluchis, which is Meloshim Lichluch, which means filthy. Omar Lahani says, Yofa Koren Oisa Lachluchis. She's very appropriately named Lachluchis. She Meluchleches B'mumim. She's filthy with mumim from top to bottom. Vishalya, so he was able to matter her on that basis. So according to the Ran's first explanation, the vote would be if he could find if he could find anything nice about her, then she would also have an off name. And Rabbi Shmuel says, you know what? Even her name is not nice. So therefore, there is in fact nothing nice about her. Therefore, the husband's neder is not in effect. According to the second explanation, Rabbi Shmuel was saying, yes, her name is in objectively is ugly, but it's a name that perfectly suits her. So therefore, that's the nice thing about her. There is a nice mum. And according to Marashal, similarly, out of all the mumim that she has, this one, to have a name that actually suits what she looks like, is perfectly suited. It's the least objectionable of all her mumim. Yeah. So therefore, she was able to be mocked to her on that basis. Another example of one of the Chachamim who set aside his kavod for Shalom Bayis, the Gemara says, "Ahu bar Bavel the Solik la'arad Yisrael." There was a man from Bavel who moved to Eretz Yisrael, Nasid Itza, and he married a wife there. So one day, Amalav Bashirli Trei Talfi. One day, he says to her, "Cook for me 2 lentils." Now, he didn't literally mean 2 lentils. Well, he meant 2 portions of lentils. But Bashilalei Trei Talfi, she literally cooked him 2 lentils. So what was going on over here? So the Rosh says that she was a shoita. She was an idiot and she didn't realize better. On the other hand, Marsha says, no, it was a language barrier. It's one of those things. He came from Babel. She came from Eretz Yisrael. In Babel, it was common enough to say 2 lentils and you mean 2 portions of lentils. But in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't use that kind of expression. So therefore, she took it literally. Rotachalot, so he got angry at her. Lamacha amala bashirili griva. The next day he says to her, cook for me a griva. Literally, a griva means a large amount. It means a saw, which is about 20 pounds. But again, usually people would use it, like, you know, in English, you might say, make for me a ton of food. You don't literally mean a ton. But again, she took him literally. Bashirili griva. She literally cooked for him a griva of food. Here, by the way, Ben Yehoyada says, doesn't say she got angry at her. He got angry at her. Because at least this time he has what to eat. Okay, a lot of food is going to waste, but at least he has what to eat. The first time the poor guy was hungry, he only had 2 lentils in front of him. Next, another time, Omala Zili Aisuli Tre Butsini. He tells her, go bring me 2 butsini. Now, this was another one of those language barrier things, because the word butsini has a double meaning. It can mean cucumbers or melons or something like that. It can also mean lamps. That was actually, according to my show, that's another one of these Eretz Yisrael versus Bavel differences. In Bavel, they use the word butsini to mean pumpkins or squash or melons or something like that, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, they use it to mean candles. So Ozlas Vais Trei Shagi. So she went and brought him 2 candles because she thought that's what he wanted. Omallah, so he was angry at her. He says, what do I need candles for? Zili tabri yasin al-resh the bava. Go break them on the top of the bava. Now, the word bava is Aramaic for the door or the gate, but the Gemara says, haba yasin bava ben buta bava. Bava ben buta, the famous chacham from the times of Hurdus, he was a Talmud of Beis Shammai. The Gemara mentions him in Beitza, in Bava Basra. The Gemara says that he's the one who advised that Hurdus originally, when he killed most of the chachamim, he left Bava ben buta alive to be his advisor, but he blinded him. Later on, Bava ben buta is the one who advised him to be mechaper on himself by rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash. So Bava ben buta now was sitting by the gate, the Kadoyin Dina, and he's judging a Din Torah. So again, she didn't realize, either like the Rosh says she was foolish and she thought that Bava means the Talmud Chacham Bava, or like Marshal says, it was a language barrier. She wasn't familiar. She figured that Bava, my husband must mean Bava as in, she wasn't familiar with the word Bava as meaning the gate. So she jumped to conclusions and thought that it meant Bava ben Buta. Oz was for Tabras Yosin al Reishis. She went and broke the lamps over Bava ben Buta's head. Omala Mahadein da Abras. She asked her, what are you doing? She says, this is what my husband told me to do. So the Bava ben buta put 2 and 2 together and realized what happened over here, that it was all a misunderstanding. But again, he wasn't angry either, because he realized that it's important for Shalom Bayis. Omar, he said, at ostis with soin bailech, you did what your husband wants. Hamokim yotzunech shnei bodim to Bava ben buta. Hashem should give you the schus because of these 2 lamps that you broke over my head, that Hashem should give you 2 children of the caliber of Bava ben buta. So So now, Mao Shab points out, at least, I mean, she wouldn't have been so foolish, or there wouldn't have been such a language barrier. If Bava and Bota hadn't been sitting in front of the gate, then she wouldn't have jumped to conclusions like that. Because he was sitting in front of the gate, and you have the double Bava over there, Bava, sitting in front of the Bava, is why she jumped to conclusions like that. Now, though, the question is, still, I mean, it is a tremendous bizoyan to a Talmid Chacham. What do you mean you did what your husband wants? Fine, maybe Bava and Bota is willing to, set aside his cupboard, but how could he say you did a good thing by doing the rotzin of your husband? The Chassam Sofer has a very interesting explanation about this. He says, we said just now that Bava ben Bota is the one who advised Hudus to rebuild the Beis Mikdash. Now, the Gemara mentions over there, that wasn't really, on the face of it, that wasn't such a good thing to do. Hudus was a Rosha. Bava ben Bota is telling him how to do a mitzvah to evade the punishment that he deserved for killing the Chachamim and doing many other terrible things. So the Gemara says over there that maybe Bava ben Bota shouldn't have done that. The Gemara brings over there Bava ben Bota had a reason why he felt it was the appropriate thing to do. But still, the other thing is, the Chassam Sofer says, during that period of Hudus is also when Beis Shammah and Beis Hillel started their many machlokes in. So then you have the problem, the Gemara calls it elsewhere, Nasus Turda, Fishtei Turdas. The Turda, in effect, became almost like two Turdas, because there was so many machlokas in that people didn't know who to follow. So, the Chassam Sofer says, Bava ben Bota realized all of that. He realized that in a way, he's at fault for all of that. If he hadn't advised Hudus to rebuild the Beis Mikdash, first of all, then Hudus wouldn't have that source. And second of all, then he might have been gone from the scene, and we would never have all those machlokas that Shammah and Beis Hillel developed. But he's thinking to himself, why did all that happen? Because there were no Chachamim around for me to consult with. Because Hudus killed all of them. So now he's saying, you know what? So he's thinking to himself, first of all, so Minashamayim, I do deserve a certain punishment. So therefore Hashem must have sent this guy to be the vehicle for that punishment, that I deserve to have these broken over my head for helping out Hudus like that. And second of all, he's saying to the woman, that Hashem should help, that you have two children of my caliber, meaning, in other words, he's hoping that in the future, there will be more Talmid Chachamim that will be of his caliber. We're there in a situation like that. He won't be left alone and left to his own judgment what to do and end up giving advice to Hudus that maybe he shouldn't. Maybe he'll have other Chachamim to consult with and they'll tell him it's a bad idea and not to do it, and therefore that will avoid these consequences that came from that. So therefore, that would explain why Bava ben Bota was praising her for doing Ritzon Baila, because he's saying, I realize that this is being brought Min HaShemayim because I did that. Hadron Aloch Rabbi Eliezer.